Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, Lulz is back after a little bye week last week. We got lots to discuss, of course, the crypto meltdown with FTX and SBF. We have breaking news in the DraftKings MMA streets. They're now allowing late swap. We'll see how Brian feels about that. And of course, it's Thursday, which means we do have to build a total shipper Thursday night football showdown winning lineup all today on Lulz. He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no. Let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Brian, we weren't able to record last week. I had something come up at the last minute, but I feel like we've had many lulzy things happen in these 2 weeks we've been off.
Yeah, the rare missed lulz episode.
I know. For years, we had just an epic undefeated streak, and you know, yeah, it's taken a few hits over the coming months.
What are you gonna do?
And honestly, like, our schedule is going to be, I mean, next Thursday is Thanksgiving, so we're not going to have a show. And then the following Thursday is my baby's due date. So, it might be a bit of a lulz winter here coming.
All right.
So you got to soak it up while you can, I guess.
Good point. Yeah. There's some things are more important even than lulz, Pete, believe it or not.
I mean, it's hard to believe. I tried to tell my wife that. If I asked her if she could get an Uber to the hospital because I had to do lulz on December 1st, and she didn't like that idea. Yeah. Let's see here. You did I think I have a little bit left. You did a marathon podcast with Davis over on the TakeCast, my guy Dangy Wing, of course, Nate Noling from the Gilcast. Where are you at? I obviously heard some of your takes on there, but I feel like this event is one – you know, it's kind of a black swanish type event, but one that I feel like you've hinted at of that makes you afraid about holding crypto in like the short and midterm. Is this like the exact kind of situation that you're worried about bringing legislation down?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, right? Like, I mean, I don't think that's a hot take, but apparently some people disagree with that. I think it's clearly the inciting incident or one of the many inciting incidents that they're going to use. One of the reasons why it might not be, though, is because he seems to kind of be this media darling and they're soft peddling him in the New York Times, et cetera, compared to other people. So maybe they won't. Maybe they really like him and they're not going to make an example out of him. So I'm not sure, but it's not Coinbase going down bad. Which would be
right. Yeah, really that bad. Would be the end. Yeah.
That would be the end for a long time. That you'd be buying, $20 Bitcoin again.
Yeah.
Which I probably would.
Yeah.
But it's not definitely not good. And I don't know if you've read anything today on it. Like, there's even more reporting of his charitable donations or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like in the $500 million plus range of giving away money. It's not his, obviously, right? So he was just giving away customer dollars, maybe not in his head, who knows? I mean, did you see that someone had a tweet today? Like one of the games he plays, he like never achieved a certain level and he's played all the time. And they're like, maybe this is evidence the guy's just an idiot. I'm like, maybe if you play a video game like constantly, you're obsessed with it. Like there's stories like he would go into these pitch meetings and just be on his, game, just gaming. And they're impressed by this for some reason. Right. And they give him they give them $200 million. But if you're playing video games that much and you stink, like, you probably shouldn't be running that business. I don't know.
It does make it hard to untangle, right? Because this is a guy who was deified by the media, by crypto communities. Like, I think that's a natural thing. Like, we want to celebrate these, you know, guys that we think are savants, you know, in ways, like in the same way we do with kind of Vitalik and stuff too. But it is now hard to know, like, how much, clearly this guy was smart, right? Like, he did build up a war chest with that arbitrage trading, but now there's so much stuff that now comes into doubt, knowing how many people he had in his pocket. You even see like the journalists over at Vox who are writing articles about him, and he like literally was funding their effective altruism vertical and stuff. And now it just brings into question, like, what was real about this dude, and actually how sharp was he?
Vox was trying to play damage control. They released a bunch of DMs and stuff that he had.
Released the DMs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is pretty shady journalism.
Unless that was the intention, was to have those leaked.
Yeah. Oh yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, you're just talking about, it's nice to have these young guys to, like, you know, look up to or whatever. It's like, same thing with Elon 10 yeah. years ago, but they don't like him anymore. Why? You know, why would they write a story shitty about Elon, but soft pedal this guy? I mean, it's clearly because money's getting changed hands. He's funding some of these charitable foundations they like, media they like, and the Democratic Party, the Democratic PACs and things like that his mom runs. And it's clear bias. I mean, is it like 13 million now? Estimate is 13 billion. I'm sorry. Because it was like 8 billion. I think now they're estimating like 13 billion. And the guy who's overseeing the bankruptcy is like calling it just clear fraud. I'm not an expert here. Not financial advice. Don't sue me, bro. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I keep seeing today, like, people posting screenshots of DMs with SBF, and like, they always seem like vaguely fake to me. Is this guy really just like talking candidly in DMs with all these random people right now? Or are you buying these where he was like, the one I saw was, he said he had like 2 weeks to raise 8 billion, presumably saying like his agreement is if he can get the 8 billion back, like he's off the hook. Like, is he actually doing this? I would assume his lawyers and advisors would say, shut up and don't say anything to anyone right now.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think he's like an oblivious fraud. I don't know. I think it's going to be, and it sucks because he's so well connected, you know, like his dad is a big regulator who's like Elizabeth Warren mentioned in some of her speeches. And so like, it sucks. That means it's going to take longer to get to the bottom. If we ever do. I mentioned this on the TakeCast. And I'm pretty sure everyone on TakeCast said it was true too. They hired the ultimate bet accountant on FTX. FTX hired this guy, and he's part of this. And for people who don't know, that it was a big poker scandal in 2000. What year was that? 2008, maybe 2009, when the cheating happened. I know everything goes down in 2011, but yeah, somewhere around there. Anyways, they hired this guy. It's like, yo, out of all the people in the world, it's like, this guy's like single-handedly trying to ruin my life.
I mean, when you think about like the cocktail of ingredients that SBF had, like, it makes sense how he turned into just like the biggest like fraud scammer, in that you have a guy that's smart, who quickly amassed wealth, who knows he has the safety net of all of these political connections and all of this stuff. He'd clearly been setting this up, cozying up with these guys for a long time. Like, he felt invincible. He felt like there was nothing that could get him in trouble. One, that he was in God mode, literally built a backdoor out of the FTX system to play with these funds. It's almost that he's just like laughing. Like, he was the spoiled, smart, rich kid who, you know, woke up on third base and thought he hit a triple, and now he is finally having his moment of reckoning, and the reckoning probably won't even be that bad.
God, I mean, we checked the odds. I don't know if they've changed on that Polygon or whatever the gambling site. And he was like 28% chance of prison time. I don't know if it's changed, and I'm assuming those markets are pretty small.
Yeah.
But isn't that seem insane? Like, what was his name? The Izzy, the MMA fighter. Adesanya, who lost over the weekend, Did you see he got arrested for, because he had bare brass knuckles in his, in his luggage, and I guess that's illegal in New York, and he got arrested. So like this guy's getting arrested for brass knuckles,
right?
But you know, you embezzled $13 billion, and you know, you just got to know the right people, and you'll be fine.
Have the Republicans made this a talking point yet? Like how much he was in bed with the Democratic Party, or late? Are they just like too dumb to even understand like how this crypto stuff works to not even want to bother with it?
I think he gave money to Mitt Romney too. I might be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure he gave to a couple of Republicans as well. But like, I mean, this is, you know, my take is I don't think there's a big difference between a lot of Republicans and Democrats anyways.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, somebody's probably going to hop on it for sure. I'm trying to think who would. I mean, I'm guessing like the Romneyites won't say anything. Maybe like Rand Paul, somebody like that. There's not a ton of Bitcoiners in Congress, unfortunately. It's bad for us. But somebody you figure would say something. They don't know anything about technology. they don't know anything about this stuff. They don't know anything about gambling. I feel like
in the right hands, though, it would be a really good talking point to bandy about. And, you know, if you wanted to paint a lot of those guys, it's like you guys saddled up with a guy who was responsible for one of the biggest, you know, collapses that we've ever seen in financial markets.
That Scott says in the chat here, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I could see that. I could see Tucker Carlson doing a piece on it, maybe.
Yeah.
Jim Jordan. Maybe. Yeah.
So how for you personally with your crypto stuff, were you dumping your coins? Are you sitting on your hands? Like what are you doing in practicality?
As soon as that story leaked, I almost sold everything. And of course, I didn't. And then, I mean, what's the bias, Pete? You guys probably know, the loss bias or
sunk cost fallacy. Sunk cost.
So like, okay, if I was going to sell at 20, it was almost 22 that day when I was going to sell. And now it's 15 or whatever. It's like, well, I already just lost 7. I might as well just stick with it.
Yeah.
From 60 whatever down to this.
Well, my thing too, like the way I think about it, and I've always been like this with my Bitcoin, is just I'm not a trader. I'm not going to be able to time this stuff. Like everything's a super long hold anyway. So like I'm not playing the game. Like I'm sitting on my hands. This was always like a 10, 15 year, 20, whatever time horizon you want to put on it. So I will say I'm a little surprised that it hasn't even tanked further. Like if you told me on paper everything that happened, I'd be like, we're at like 3K Bitcoin right now.
I said the same thing to my brother in DMs the other day. I'm like, yeah, I'm surprised it's not lower.
Yeah.
It's pretty, I kind of understand ETH because so much of it's staked and the people can't get out. I can't get out. I'm staked in a lot of it.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes sense. I could see that. Like if they unstake randomly, I could see that dropping, but it's true. It's actually held up. And it was for a moment there before the controversy, it was decoupling from some of the stock market, big stock market drops over the last couple months. Not perfectly, but better than before where it was like 0.9R or whatever, which is always a sign, something I look into. So, but I mean, it's kind of like exploitive play, you know, versus GTO. Like if you know that it's going to drop, even though you care 15 years down the road, you might as well sell it and then buy it when it drops. Right. I mean, like if we know there's going to be some huge regulations, that's going to drop it. And you know, someone on the inside or something, you should probably sell and then buy. I guess that would be illegal. Don't do that. But if you did know anyone, you had good intuition. But yeah, I didn't sell any. I was really considering it. I logged in, I was looking at it, and then I went and did something, and then I came back, it was down $3,000 from there, and I'm like, ah, fuck it, sunk cost.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I had definitely, I think probably last year, and when like the bull was like kicking off, maybe in like April or May, I had a decent chunk in the Gemini earn stuff, just as like, I already had some money there, just like, let it get there, and then at some point I was like, this feels like, you know, what's the saying, picking pennies up in the middle of the highway, and so I took it out of the earn And then when this stuff kicked in, I think it was like a week ago, I finally took all of my stuff off of Gemini. Obviously feeling very, very good about that. And it was like a nice, you know, you kind of appreciate that reminder. You get complacent. And again, it's such a cliche, not your keys, not your coins. This really, really illustrated it in a very real way of what that means.
Yeah. And I did the same thing, except I left money on some of the ones because I'm staked. But yeah. I got off all the small ones. Like Gemini and Kraken, like what other ones? Like they
– BlockFi.
Oh, crypto.com. BlockFi's done, right? Pretty much. Crypto.com, I would say, is probably next on the chopping block if something's going under. Kraken, then Gemini. I'm just guessing here. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, if we start getting there, oof. I mean, you might want to sell. I mean, if that shit starts happening, I don't care about 15 years. And like my bull case for 15 years, I talked about this on the pod too, is kind of changed a little bit to like we have to find a way to get kind of like, I don't know, the internet or something, more of like a Trojan horse where people don't even know they're using TCP/IP or whatever the protocol is called. Right. Mm-hmm. It's just they're just using it where somehow Bitcoin just has to be, you know, everyone's just using it and they don't know it, mm-hmm. as opposed to everyone wanting it. Where before, right. I always thought there was a chance people would kind of like, oh, understand the Federal Reserve is printing all this money. Why, you know, let's take the money out of the control of a centralized entity, the government. And everyone knows the arguments for Bitcoin. I just don't think that is realistic anymore. I don't think people care. Really, the majority of people, I think they don't care. And whenever a story comes out, like SBF, they'll paint it however they want to paint it, and the majority of people will believe whatever they say. So like now they'll probably think SBF's not that bad if they read the New York Times. But if they did the opposite thing, they'll like Elon, they'll think he's the worst. They'll just believe whatever they write. And so if they go after Bitcoin, it could really fuck us up. And I don't think people are just going to come to this epiphany that like Bitcoin maxis have. I just don't think that's realistic. I think the only path is it just becomes ubiquitous in people's everyday lives and they don't even know they're using it, kind of. Something like that.
Yeah. H-Ball talked about like the Gemini stuff. So yeah, so it was their the firm they were using for their yield farming stuff or whatever, the Genesis, that was the one that I think is in trouble right now. But their stuff, but if you were using their earn program, I believe withdrawals are still halted for that stuff there. But yeah, Gemini theoretically still has the funds back, but I don't know. It starts to bring it into question for sure.
A lot of Bitcoin influencers taking a L, huh? Like Papliano, just like a lot of those YouTube investment bro guys who pumped FTX. There's a lot of them.
Well, and because, and I mean, the whole thing with FTX and two with, you mentioned those influencers is like, there was a sense of like safety of like, this is regulated. This is, you know, this isn't just the wild west of crypto. Like they're answering, you fucking see Tom Brady slapped on the side of a billboard. It gives you trust. That's the whole fucking reason they make that PR play. Oh, if Tom's into it, it has to be fine. And I think to a same extent, like I had that trap with the Blockfolio. Like my one casualty through all of this is I had that Blockfolio credit card that I would use for stuff and get Bitcoin rewards in. Cause I was just like, you know, my cash back rewards are pretty shitty over here. I'll just get some Bitcoin rewards instead. And so I have like, you know, $300 of BTC rewards locked up now on Blockfolio. But there was a sense of trust in that. Like, hey, this is a Visa, you know, credit card here affiliated through Blockfolio. What could go wrong? I think we all got lulled into a false sense of trust with a lot of this stuff, the yields included.
Yeah, I wouldn't give the influencers much of a pass as you. I mean, I know you're an influencer, but
I'm not giving them a pass.
Oh, okay. Because like, I think it's okay for you to be fooled a little bit more than a guy who's like getting, you know, 50% of their ad revenue from BlockFi or FTX, and they're a self-described financial expert. Like they should like look into it a little more, right? Like,
Well, it's gross because, like, for people who don't, like, I assume most people know how this works. These guys had big affiliate deals with these exchanges. And depending on how the relationship is set up, a lot of them are getting a percentage of, like, net market spend that people put on these exchanges. So they're heavily incentivized to get people on and using them. And these guys were probably making, like, I've heard some insane numbers. Like, some of these guys were making, like, legit, like, upward six figures a month, just because if you get a few whales on there that are heavily using that and you're getting a cut of all their trades. So of course these guys are going to be blasting these links out nonstop. Do they actually give a shit what's going on behind the scenes, how above board it is? No, they're fucking cashing checks every month.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably most likely what happened. Maybe, like, some of them were, like, fooled. I mean, it's possible they showed them, like, false documents on where they kept the money and stuff like that. But yeah. I doubt it. They were probably just cashing bank checks. And I mean, Pete, I mean, $600,000. You dump a truckload of money in someone's driveway, and it's like, you know, FTX is, that's not that bad. Maybe yeah. You should invest in it. That's a big carrot.
And it's crazy to think, like, these guys were, in their mind, pushing reputable exchanges. You want to talk about, I mean, anyone who was around in, what was it, 2017, when we got the first altcoin, like, pump? I mean, the amount, and I always remember this because Doug Polk was covering it very closely on his YouTube channel back then. But I mean, the amount of the 5 altcoins that'll send you to the moon stuff. I mean, like, talk about some predatory shit out there. And they kind of get away with it in a bull market. I guess I don't know what's worse. Like, you know, pushing random shit coins or actually pushing people to exchanges where their money might not be safe.
Yeah, I'll make one more point that I said on the Takecast, but we did 2 hours, so you guys should still check it out if you're interested.
Yeah.
And it's that that's another issue with the FCC and a lot of government regulatory bodies is they give a false sense of security to everyday Joes like us, people in the chat who don't have time to research this stuff. And they just assume it's regulated because this entity's out there. Right. And yeah. The fact is, even, you know, I made a prediction on the show, like, we'll be back in 5 years or 10 years doing a pod after it gets regulated. A completely regulated company has another Enron FTX like scandal because they don't know how to regulate these industries. They don't, you know, Chuck Grassley and fucking Diane Feinstein do not know how Bitcoin works or how it should be regulated. They don't, right. And the people who make the rules are the companies that capture those regulatory bodies, and they make those rules to the benefit of themselves. And so not only does it not work, it gives regular folks a false sense of security. So I just hate the whole fucking process. And we've been saying on this show, Pete, for a couple of years that this day was coming. It still hasn't somehow. They still haven't really come cracking down on regulation, but
yeah,
I think you got to see it soon here.
I know. Yeah, it's definitely coming. I mean, you know how slow they are with all of that stuff. I mean, you even see how it goes down for, like, the tax reporting stuff. Like, anyone who was, you know, trading NFTs last year know how the infrastructure for even reporting that stuff, like, basically didn't exist. Like, what do they say the wheels of justice move slowly? Like, this stuff is going to take so long to develop, but, like, it's coming, right? It's just a matter of when. Paul says, so sad, no drunk lulls, drunk Thanksgiving streams were a treat last year. Well, Brian is invited. We haven't even reached out to anyone yet. But we're going to do our Wednesday ship chasing, drunk stream. So Brian, I say you, swing by for that one on
yeah,
Wednesday.
I could probably
night
do that. Actually,
little crossover over there.
All right. Should we do MMA now?
Yeah. Let's talk about this for anyone who didn't see MMA, which used to just have your regular one lock time whenever the first fight started. They've now moved to a late swap scenario. I still don't know the exact mechanics, Brian, of how it's going to work the window between there, but this is a pretty massive shift for what this means as far as playing MMA on DraftKings.
Yeah, so it's going to be just like NBA. This is my understanding. Any fighter that hasn't fought yet, you will be able to switch your lineups. You won't see any ownership of those fighters till the fight happened, till the fight happens. And it'll be exactly like MMA. I hate it. I hate that they're doing the full switch where they could have done so many middle ground solutions, but they probably would have taken more coding. I would rather just had nothing for sure, personally. For people who don't know, but in like DFS, late swap always helps the expert players more than the casuals, but they make these changes to satisfy casuals who complain when their fighters get ruled out. And that doesn't even happen that often in MMA. Like, it happens more, I would say, in PGA. Of all the, you know, in between solutions, like just open it up if a fighter does get ruled out, don't show the ownership, something like that, or like an alternate, or just like in tennis, they give like points to the person who didn't withdraw. You know, they could do that. So, and, you know, just, you know, a litany of ideas you could do. And they chose the worst one.
Yeah. And just so if people are wondering, like, you can, not that I don't think either of us agree with it, but you can put yourself in DraftKings shoes and know that they are getting lit up with incredibly angry people who build one lineup, you know, on their phone and just want to sweat that out. And then that guy scratched and they're tilting their goddamn face off because they put money in and now their guy isn't there. So that's what they're dealing with. That's why this happened. Obviously, those people don't understand why this is bad for them. It does seem like you said, like a tech thing, like Underdog has their battle royale drafts. You do a ton of them and you can set your ranks for who you would want if the guy is scratched. If you draft Mark Andrews this week and he doesn't go, if you don't set anything, they'll just give you the top available tight end who wasn't taken in that draft. Or you can rearrange it yourself and say, hey, I want Isaiah Likely here, his backup, if he doesn't go. Like, I don't know why they couldn't just have some solution like that. Either you get the next best fighter who's below that salary, or you have some kind of alternate thing. To me, that's the solution. Then they don't tilt their face off. You have some control over setting your alternate fighter or whatever. And then the casual players aren't getting screwed by the opto bros.
Yeah. I think it was because they don't want to recode anything. Like, that's my only guess. That's going to take a lot of work. But we can just turn on the late swap functionality that we have in multiple other sports. Okay, yeah. Just do that. I don't know. I think it's pretty much what you said, where they get 95% of the people are casuals complaining about this issue. And they go, and those 95%, you know, only 4% of those will realize they're getting screwed by this late swap. So who cares? Let's just do it. Even though it's not helping them, they don't know it. So we'll get less customer emails.
And they're losing me because I would say I'm playing about like every other Saturday. If I have like a chill Saturday afternoon, I'll make lineups, toss them in. Like I'm not playing now. Like I have my one day a week on Sundays where I hawk my lineups all day. I do late swap for my Sunday teams. Like that's enough. Like that's draining as is. I'm not fucking doing that on a Saturday night, especially if you're MMEing too. I guess I would ask you, Brian, you are one of the people that actually is fully capable of taking advantage of this, exploiting it, realizing your edge. One, are you going to do that? It sounds like regardless though, you wish this wouldn't have happened so you could just run your stuff, sit back, have a few beers and enjoy your Saturday evening.
Yeah. I wish they would take it back or switch to something else. I still haven't decided. I think the first week you could probably do just some manual stuff. I doubt anyone's going to be set up for it. Or maybe some people will. Some psychos out there will be set up for it. I might stop playing the 5-5-5. I think it hurts you more. This is my opinion. It hurts you more in the smaller fields. In the larger fields, I don't think it's the end of the world. It still sucks. Don't get me wrong. But in the smaller fields, you definitely could really put the screws to people who aren't paying attention. You know, just like a simple example where you're going into the last fight, you're behind a guy, and he has like enough salary for Izzy Adesanya, the clear favorite. Well, you could just take Pereira, you know, the dog, and just, you know, and then there's like. And then if you get really complicated, that's when you can start doing the game theory stuff where you just play a mixed strategy of sometimes you take Izzy and sometimes you take Pereira because they won't take advantage of you. But the more you spread out that those you know, whatever GTO head-to-head comparisons, and you start adding in multiple opponents, it's a lot harder to compute and figure out what the right move is. And a lot of times there's enough combinations where it doesn't even matter that much. But like, if, you know, you could just do some simple stuff. Like if you had a really, like I had that, what was his name? Graziano, whatever, like Italian named fighter at the lowest own this weekend, 6%. And I had him in like almost 40% of my lineups. Well, then I could switch all those to kind of more chalky, probably go and look at those things like that. This is if you're doing it by hand. It's actually worse than NBA, because if it's a 14 game slate, it's like
gonna say
hours longer. NBA's from 6 to 9 real America time, right? That's pretty much it. Maybe 9:30.
And wouldn't you say, like, of all the sports, the way, like, the stop start nature to, like, the information coming in for each fight as it builds up, like the late swap, like, becomes all the more powerful from like a GTO perspective, like the way it is, because every single fight you're getting more information, and it's staggered in a way that you could rerun your stuff every single fight with updated info to get you to the most optimal lineups by the end of the night.
Sure. Like, yeah, like a guy who's like projected at 50% ownership comes in at 27 or something. Just let's say everyone's off. Well, then you could redo your stuff and with that information in mind, and so on and so forth. And, you know, you're just trying to cash with some lineups now. You know, they have no shot, but you just like, okay, well, I need these lineups. I need these type of guys, because if it gets lucky, they'll at least cash. And you're changing the EV of all these lineups.
Cool. So there's always in the chat pushing back, saying like, how many people can actually take advantage of this dynamic? Like with regular DFS, there's levels to it, right? Like Brian, you know, or someone who has a sim taking advantage of late swap scenarios is going to be different than even someone like, you know, say Dink, who plays DFS and does a lot of late swap, like MME stuff. Like, he's not using a sim, but he's still taking advantage of that dynamic to make better lineups with more information. So there's levels to it. It's so it doesn't just have to be sim bros. It could be guys who have access to Fantasy Cruncher or whatever that are able to re-optimize as well, or take on more risk. Like, I don't think it's just binary. You have a sim to crush it or you don't.
And you certainly don't, if you're not going to do it, you don't want to play head to head. Like, it's very easy for your opponent to just make a swap on you.
Right.
So you don't want to play anything head to head, three man. I already recommend don't play three mans, but if you do, definitely don't do it now. Like, or small field, like, you know, 10 man, stuff like that. It's easy for your opponent to just go in, take a look and be like, oh, okay, he's in first, so he's probably playing the favorite in the last fight. I'll just switch to the bad guy. And then that lineup goes from totally dead to now having, you know, whatever. Now low, like 25, 30% equity for cashing, but that changes his EV completely and kills yours.
Yeah, and it'll be brilliant. Like, do you think Neil, who I know plays a ton of MMA, just not worth it if you can't dedicate all day to it, which is what people say about NBA. It's why Ricky D said you can free your mind, you can free your soul by not playing NBA. Do you think the prize pools like take a hit? Do you think there are guys like you who are actually fully capable of taking advantage of this dynamic that just start sitting this out because you don't want the whatever mental and physical energy regarded to do it correctly?
Well, he also said that no one will sit it out. He said everyone will bitch and they'll still play. It sounds like a lot of people will be sitting this out a little more frequently unless they have their whole Saturday open. And as me and you are well aware when inviting people on the show, DFS players have a lot of free time. So I'm not worried about doing that. But I do think some people will stop. Like I said, I might not do the big ones now because they're so small. It's so long too, where NBA also has a structured start time where did I say NBA? NBA is a structured start time. MMA is kind of a little random.
Yeah.
So like if the guy gets or girl gets knocked out in the first, there's going to be a longer break. If the, you know, in the second, it's a little shorter. In the third, you got a short break. So you really have to keep that in mind. If there was a full three rounds, and then the next fight gets ruled out or whatever, like maybe not the next fight, but a fight down the road, you have a lot less time to change those lineups. I don't even know what that could be 10, 15 minutes. It just seems like a horrible idea that could piss people off too there, because they'll be like, oh, my fighter's ruled out. And they got like 5 minutes and then they don't get it in. And now they're even more angry, you know? So.
And I'm with like how Paul's saying this sounds a little tempting to just play one lineup in single entry and see how it plays out. Like if I did play, this would now be how I do it. Cause it becomes fairly obvious. It's the same way we talk about in NFL where it's like Josh Jacobs can be 45% owned at 4 PM. And it's like, well, if you're crushing early, you can let the chalk running back ride. And if you're buried, you can't fucking play a 45% owned Josh Jacobs. So you can sit around and see how your lineup's doing. And if you want to take the, what, the plus 800 dog in the finals, because your lineup's dusted, like then that's an obvious move for you. But it's just like, it does seem the way talking to you, how people enjoy MMA. It's like, you set your lineups and then you get to kick back and enjoy them. You don't want to be thinking about fucking GTO late swap for this.
No. What was Saturday? It was like from five, started at five, ended at 11 or something. So you get to sit at your computer for 6 fucking hours. Now, and it doesn't even have to be ruled out, because like Pete said, they could just leverage the information as it comes in with fighters winning and losing and ownership changing and stuff like that. So it's really annoying. One advantage you can't have in MMA that you do in NBA is like if LeBron James is questionable, you could theoretically gamble and not play early guys and hope they don't crush for when LeBron gets ruled out. You'll have a whole bunch of open slots to pick whoever, Anthony Davis, whoever's, you know, playing for him, Bruce Brown, etc. You can't really do that in MMA. You don't, like, unless the reporting is really good. But I don't think I've ever seen this happen where it's like, oh, this guy might not fight tonight. Like, that rarely happens. But I guess you could do that. You know, another strategy now, Paul mentioned that one lineup. I guess for GPP bros, you could kind of do, like, three lineups and play, like, the first guy underdog. And then, like, hopefully he wins. And if he doesn't, you could just switch all the other guys to even underdogs to try to cash and like just play each fight, like pick some early fights and then adjust based on those and then just call it a day.
Here's a question for you. Cause like what actually stirs this drink for DraftKings? Cause the talking point generally is you have the 150 maxers, people like you guys are the ones playing the rake. You guys are the ones that help keep these prize pools big. And yet, it's clear that the, I don't know, vocal majority in this case were the casual players who are tilting their face off. Like you guys aren't DMing DraftKings, you know, asking for this kind of stuff. So like if DraftKings is waiting, like our MMA DFS ecosystem, what's more valuable, our 150 maxers and our hardcore players or the casuals who are just putting in one lineup? I mean, this seems to tilt it in saying that they care more about those casuals, right?
It does, yeah. I wish I knew what the real behind the scenes reasoning was. It'd be interesting, because they're public. Yeah. Whatever they say publicly is probably not going to be like, ah, oh, these idiots won't know that it's bad for them anyways. Just do it, and then they'll stop complaining. Who knows what their final reasoning was? I wish they didn't do it. Like if anything, MMA could have used like a slight scoring change. Like I think like for stuffs when they stuff a takedown, that should be like a point or something. I think that would level of scoring out. Otherwise, it was like a really good product. And you set it. It took me about an hour to do all my stuff, set it, play all their turn. I played everything. I mean, they're middle, they're big, they're small. I didn't play any of their cash.
Yeah.
So I know. I hate it.
Do you? I'm not in the weeds enough to know like how these scratches materialize. Is there anything like with football, right, where they are mandated 90 minutes before kickoff to release their inactives? How is? Do you know how it works for UFC? Like when they have to like say this fight is on or off, or is it just so random?
It's random. The reporting is not nearly as good. There's no requirements, so that's why there's fights. Fighters get ruled out post lock.
Yeah.
No one knew.
Yeah. That's it. Because I was just wondering, like, is there a way it could be more systemized to where maybe like similar to NFL where there's a 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. that there's like two waves. Like you have the early wave with the prelims and that's one. And then you can late swap once before like the main card starts. Like just something to reduce the like rolling nature of it. But I don't know if that solves any of the issues of random late scratches.
I would take that over the switching at any time. Like, I mean, I'm assuming it's a coding thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with it. Don't want to pay. I hate it. I mean, I wish I would have saw that the original tweet. I was just giving a thanks. I hate it. I don't know who likes this idea. Some people think they're going to take advantage of it. It's like, okay, maybe. It's going to be pretty tough, though.
Yeah. A lot of fighters hanging out in the Deposit Kingdom Discord. Their coach is ready to release the alpha to us here for these late scratches.
Did that happen?
No, I don't think so.
Hey, we have had Pete get us some League of Legends boots alpha on the ground reporting from Stixay's mom.
That's right. It's right. I know. Those were the golden days where I was the Adam Schefter of League of Legends there for a little bit. Who was the guy that was actually the main reporter for one of those leagues? He's like some Korean guy. He was like he was the true Schefter who starting lineups. Yeah.
What was his name?
Someone in the chat might remember that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Cause like he would occasionally write in English.
Kenzie. Yes. Kenzie, that was it. Lou remembers. Oh man, that guy was great. So hang on. I think I heard you say that you might scale back some of your play. So where are you at officially? You're not fully boycotting.
I'll probably go full this Saturday. I don't think anyone's going to be going so hard, but I mean, like you could even recrunch after. I think I'm going to go at least one more week full. And then after that, I might just ditch the three maxes, the 5-5-5. But I think adjusting for the huge field, it's not that hard. I already have an idea for doing a full sim for it that I think is doable. I just don't know if I want to prioritize that over fixing my football sim and improve my NBA sim.
Yeah. And it's the other thing too about it. And people were talking in the chat. I don't know where it was about like, it's not just you doing your number crunching too. There is like a bit of like a hand in the dirt element to like watching all the news on this. Like if a fighter is looking iffy, then you're having to pay attention to that. Like the amount of news hawking that goes into it too. Like now you need your MMA, tweet deck column up and like it just opens up just a massive can of worms as far as like doing it right.
Yeah, I mean it just sucks balls. I don't know what else to say. It sucks on so many levels. I wish they wouldn't do it. Maybe we should all just constantly tag them to tell them to stop. They have changed. They have flipped these policies before.
Yeah. And I really did enjoy like the only sport that I've really consistently played other than NFL DFS is MMA because it like lines up perfectly. Like I have free time on a Saturday afternoon, you set your lineups and then the dream is you check back in about 10:30 and you have a sweat for some of the final fights. Like it's such a pure like DFS thing. It like fits into your schedule nicely. And now it's like, all right, well I'm done playing this.
It's probably if you drop the amount of entries you do and then no one gets scratched.
Yeah,
it's probably just wait till the end and then go. Okay, I'm there's 20 favorite lineups in front of me. Probably I'll just switch to the dog, you know, shit like that, and that's it, and call it a day. Just make your switches at the end.
Well, it still goes back to the thing. There's like one, if you're truly trying to optimize everything, you need to be at your computer the entire night. It to do even what you just described, like, yeah, you need to be watching the fights. You need to be hawking your lineups. You need to then be sitting down. Like even that, I'm saying I'm too lazy to even do that on a Saturday night. Like I just enjoyed being able to check my phone and be like, holy shit, if this guy wins, I'm going to win and I'm going to fire up some fucking bootleg stream and sweat it at 11:30.
Yeah. I'm not describing a winning strategy. I'm just saying if I still wanted to play and I was just the guy who kind of enters, you know, 20 lineups every other week, I would probably enter like two lineups or three lineups.
Yeah.
And then watch the fights, don't watch the fights. Just, you know, check your phone for people getting scratched, I guess.
Yeah.
But hopefully, I mean, if you're on Twitter anyways, you might see that. And then pop in at the end and then look if you're doing well and you got a shot to win, look at that lineup that's got a shot to win and then switch that last guy to whatever's more favorable. And that's it. And then, I mean, I'm not saying that's going to win long term. Here's another thing too is what if they do switch? So I bet a lot of people won't put the time in because they might switch back. And why would you spend all this time building out a late swap MMA sim when there's a reasonable chance they might stop it. So I know, I mean, I'm not starting, I'm not doing anything on it yet, but I bet some other guys aren't either.
Yeah. And I mean, like Q-Bird said, like, yeah, this is totally true. You could just watch the live odds if they shift a ton, you know, something came out. But that's the point we're making, is we don't want to sit around and watch live odds in hawk Twitter MMA reporters all day. Like,
yeah, that's true.
No one wants to do.
Right, for sure. But even if we did, I don't think the live odds is going to matter that much, because they wouldn't switch. The fight's not going to go off, is the point. If the fight doesn't go off, like, who cares what the odds are? I mean, I guess maybe they would, but.
Well, I guess one thing that I've always been surprised, like, hasn't really happened in it, or I guess I should ask you, for your system with your sim, like for NFL, are you able to run something that would be able to pretty accurately project 4 p.m. ownership percentages based on what came in at 1 p.m.? Like, do you have an automated way to gauge or like fine tune your 4 p.m. ownership after getting 1 p.m.?
I don't for NFL, no, but I don't think it's probably something I should add, but I got a whole bunch of holes I'm trying to plug first.
Yeah.
In like NBA, and there's only so much time my guy has the code. So I would like to add that, but no, I don't. And I know exactly how I would do it. But also, like, it's not apples to apples for how I do it anyways.
Okay. So what do you think of like the conversation? I know Adam Levitan had a tweet, I think it was last week, and you know, there's obviously been all kinds of conversation about ownership projections and also the differences in, you know, high stakes, single entry three max versus the lottos and all of that. Like, where are you at on, are you surprised that like the industry hasn't adopted more like dual ownership sets or more contest specific ownership sets? It seems like for them, it's just far too much work relative to what they're actually going to get back from that investment.
Yeah, probably is too much work for them. I would like it. I told them, hey, do it. I'll take them.
You'll pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like it, but, it hasn't come out yet, has it? I mean, Stochastic's got a bunch. They have a decent amount. Like, they have late slate. They have showdowns, but only a certain size. But yeah, it would be sweet to see like a single entry, a small field high stakes would be cool.
Yeah.
But you can make these adjustments on your own a lot easier than coming up with your own ownership.
Yeah.
Like, you could just use their ownership, build up a database of their ownership with the actual ownership and the whatever GPP you're trying to beat. So say a single entry, and then just run a regression on the results with like just points per dollar even, you know, maybe like salary points per dollar. You there's some tricks you can do in there too, but, and then compare it to what the actual ownership was. And then you could just use the real ownership, apply that regression for your single entry, and you'll have close enough ownership.
Right. Yeah. And to me, like, if you had to ask me, like, what would I want? Like, yeah, I think it's fairly easy to make, you know, I have a good feel for it. If you play the same contest over and over, you kind of know, like, hey, if this guy projects at 20% and like the Millie Maker, he's going to come in at 35, like ownership condenses around the best plays, yada, yada. I think the thing that would be really interesting though, was an actual math based update based on the actual ownership percentages in the 1 p.m. to then inform like the 4 p.m. Because there's always like a lot of guesswork with it. And sure, you can do some math, but with the flex, and there's just still enough ambiguity that it is a moving target.
Yeah. And you could easily do this. You could, like, let's say that there's two games in the afternoon slate. You could take the four quarterbacks ownership in the early slate and just apply it to 100%. Right. So just, and it'll be pretty close.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, this is for the afternoon slate. So like, if you wanted to project the afternoon slate, just use the early slate. And so if they're like, you know, 10%, 5%, 2%, 1%, you just those percentages out of that total and then multiply times one or 100, depending, and it'll be close enough.
Do you know, then going back to the MMA thing, that'll be interesting, like using the example of, say, your main fight, final fight, whatever they call it, the title card. If you do have a huge dog, and let's just say ownership projections heading into the slate were like, you know, 80% of the people are on the favorite in lineups and 15% are on the underdog. And then now that you have late swap, seeing what that comes in over the projected 15%, let's assume it was correct, and knowing how many people are taking advantage of that, because theoretically, how many lineups in, I don't know, 100,000 person contest, like they should actually swap to that underdog, knowing that ownership percentage.
Yeah.
And that would give you a really good gauge of how many people are actually taking advantage of it. Cause then you flip over the cards, you're like, oh, this guy came in at 35%. There's a lot of people taking advantage of it. That'll be interesting to see.
Yes. Yes. And I'm guessing, they're not going to adjust right. properly. And it's going, you know, in the beginning here, it's going to be way off and they're not going to adjust for it. So I would probably overcorrect in the early going, just assuming they're not going to adjust for it. So definitely
much easier, like Brian was saying, when you can look at your opponents, right? And this is why you don't want to play the three mans and stuff, right? Because it's going to be far more exploitable for the people who are able to go through each individual one of those.
Right. Yeah. So like, if you're in the lead and the head to head, whatever the percentages are of the fighters win percentage, like you should be mixing those on that proportion of who you actually end up picking.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like 80-20, you should be picking that 80% guy 80% of the time and the other guy 20% of the time in like a perfect strategy. But in reality, you probably in the beginning should just do 100% the 80% guy, because they're not going to switch enough. They're, you know, and then eventually move that over to probably like 10%. And I don't know, maybe 15 max. Like I would still just be exploitive there probably for now. I hate this. I don't want to do that with MMA. It was so fun, man. Just make an hour long, sit back, turn on the big screen and watch some fights. My guys get their ass kicked, put on YouTube or something.
It is really crazy too that like, I know Blender had tweets out that he hated this. You hate it. Like, are there any sim bros that are like licking their chops at this of like, I'm sitting around anyways on a Saturday night, let's fucking go.
There has to be.
Yeah.
I'll ask a couple people. I don't know. I haven't really asked anyone. When there's money to be made, Pete, when there's money to be made, expect to be cheated and expect a sim bro to outwork you.
Well, it goes back to kind of more of Ricky's thing with NBA, right? Like if the projections and stuff is so efficient and then it's also requiring this additional massive time investment, like what is the actual ROI? Like if, let's just say now these guys have to sit around their computer for an extra 5 hours that were literally free for them to do whatever else. Like there's an opportunity cost. You could put an actual number on how much your time is valued there relative to what edge you're gaining.
It's true. It's true. I get exactly what he's saying and I'm on board for the majority of it. My only argument against Ricky's point there is for the NBA, it's about 3 hours, 6 to 9. And like, if you like work in, you know, a shitty job in real life and have a shitty boss and you have to commute and, you know, and it just sucks. And then someone's complaining about making a nice living and putting in an extra 3 hours to achieve that. It sounds a little entitled. You know what I mean? Like people actually have really shitty jobs out there. So like, you know, I'm still putting in that extra 3 hours for now. And sometimes you don't even have to do too much. You know, come on. Pete's like, I don't know what you're calling yourself now. Just a sports gambling influencer, whatever your job is.
I don't even know how to explain it to you, Brian. So I don't blame you for.
I'm a gambler. We're lucky. Yeah. Whatever you want to call yourself, you're in the good lucky spot. So a couple extra hours, I'm fine for now. Although I do get his overall general.
This pattern for casuals too, like one of Underdog's most requested features with their Pick'em product was insurance, you know, it's where people wanted to have insurance when they do a five leg, you know, if only four hit that they're able to get that back and they're actually hurting their long-term EV in playing Pick'ems the way the insurance is, in the same way you don't want to do insurance playing blackjack. Like it's just a thing that makes us feel better. And so the casuals want to know. And so it's like, yeah, long-term it's going to hurt you. Maybe if you're playing one lineup, it's not actually impacting them on these small sample sizes. But overall for the ecosystem, it's just a double whammy, right? Because it'd be one thing if you guys were all going to continue playing and then they had their way. But if they actually lose some of their whales, MMEing, it could just like doubly hurt the ecosystem of casuals getting it in bad and less guys even wanting to max.
It's I agree with you. And like, remember pre-pandemic, what was first place? Like sometimes it was like 20 grand, I think, on small nights, 50 grand occasionally, if I recall correctly. And then they started doing 100,000. They eventually had a $1 million, if you guys remember that. First prize in MMA. And then so they had this, you know, kind of lucky rise in their MMA product because of the pandemic that stayed with it post-pandemic, and then they fuck with it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make any sense to me. I hate it. I'll probably end up degenning for a while and possibly making my own thing. I'm going to hold off on making it until they, like 100%, they're not going to change. Because I think there's a 20% chance. I don't know. They change back. Maybe 30.
Do we, in the other one, too, like I feel, I mean, I know that MMA has a huge fan base, but I assume there's an ebb and flow with the contest and interest relative to how good of a card it is, right? And I bet you feel the valleys more so in non-premium cards. And that'll probably be really telling to see, like, I mean, when was the last time does DraftKings ever have overlay on some of their bigger MMA contests, or do they normally always fill those?
They almost always fill the MMAs.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if they get smaller, if there's a correction. Yeah. I guess time will just tell.
Here's my first prediction. There'll be a lot more dupes because people will be just swapping after some fights.
Well, that's what happens to me sometimes in NFL. Like I'm dusted. I make the late swap, and then me and all my fellow GPP bros are making the same thing. And then the guy I swapped to is more owned than the guy I fucking swapped off of. And you're like, God damn it.
Right. Yeah. That's the part. That's the problem with GTO in a multiple opponent environment. It's really tricky and there's not a ton you could do.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Well, there you go. We'll see how this plays out. Brian, before we get out of here, would you like to split 500K with some of our closest friends tonight?
Yeah, last time no one duped us, Pete, remember?
We finally, you know, we've been playing a dangerous game of can we build as gross of a lineup to where even the 155 people watching live are like, you know what? I don't want to dupe that lineup.
That lineup's pretty shitty. And it was a little too bad, honestly. Like we got gun shy because the week before we got like 12 dupes or eight, whatever it ended up being. And so we got a little gun shy, went a little contrarian.
Yeah, you know, as we're known to do here. Davis, who, that was over on the Tilt Space channel. Davis got me on Christian Watson in the 4 p.m. or afternoon only slate. That was an absolute smash. Looking at like the Sims versus ownership that I ran earlier, Henry, Lazard, Rogers, and Watson look like the best captain plays relative to projected ownership. You got anyone looking to the stars, any of these captains you like, or should we just captain Watson for Davis?
All right, yeah, throw Watson in there.
Why not?
That almost guarantees a concussion for the young man, but
the classic Davis mush. It's in full effect right here. All right, here we go. All right, and I will put this in. How big is this contest tonight? 117,000. I'll put this in my sheet so we can see what we're looking at. But Brian, what pick do you want here?
I want some AJ Dillon.
Ooh, okay. All right, talk it out. Let me get your hand in the dirt. K. Is this because of the weather here?
No, it's because I got an alert to bet the over on his prop rushing yards in a Discord I'm in. And so I'm like, hey, okay, it must mean he's going to do good in fantasy.
That's it. Brick.
I haven't run anything.
Brick getting inside the mind of a phone shitter lineup builder right here. I love it. And I will say, you know, if you want to get your hand really in the dirt, I remember this game. I don't know if you remember this, Brian, from 2 years ago. The Packers hosted the Titans, and it was a cold weather game in December, I believe, at Lambeau. And AJ Dillon went absolutely nuts. I think he had like 150 yards and two touchdowns against his Titans team. And they barely used Aaron Jones, who had been the lead back. This was AJ Dillon's rookie year. The cold weather narrative, I mean, the Packers have been going with Jones, but tonight, boots on the ground says it's frigid there. We got snow. Feels like an AJ Dillon game.
Okay. Well, then I made the right pick.
I think you did. I certainly think you did. So then I feel like one of the big decision points for this slate is once Randall Cobb is declared active, he's only $200. I think he's going to be mega, mega steamed. So I feel like we should find a way to leverage everyone playing punt play Randall Cobb.
All right.
So if that is the thesis here, why don't we play Alan Lazard? Because I think a lot of people are going to want to play Watson. They're going to want to play Cobb. No one wants to pay up and play Alan Lazard.
All right.
And we are running out of money quickly.
Yeah, so I guess there's no Derrick Henry here.
No.
Shit. I guess you can't even do any of the quarterbacks, huh?
So the one guy that might save a salary that looked good in the Sims and is also direct leverage if you're not playing Henry is Dontrell Hilliard. Looks pretty good to me.
Okay.
At 3,200.
Yeah, put Hilliard in there and then let's see what we got left.
That gives us
okay. No, now we got plenty.
We're good. Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. Okay. Now, do we want to go 4-2 or a 5-1?
So when I was looking at the early Sims, they were all like 4-2, 5-1 Packers. So I would say we maybe go 5-1. I assume 4-2 Packers is probably going to be the most popular construction.
Okay. Well, then I think we have to do Rodgers then. I mean, you want to do Rodgers, and then if we get two dupies, switch him out?
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, and then that leaves us 9,300 there. So we got Rodgers to Lazard, Watson, Dillon. I'm guessing like a kicker defense here probably helps us not be too dupey.
Well, and we're going to be way under the salary too.
Right. Right.
So,
if you wanted to, you could toss Tonyan or Dusty Sammy Watkins in there.
I mean, this lineup we're building is just like a Packers domination. So Packers D kind of looks pretty obvious. What does that look like for that's not going to be duped.
This is a lineup. This is how you win. This is how you win it all right here. I'm telling you.
That's pretty shitty. What if we switched Hilliard out? Because we could go Robert Woods or Westbrook. Westbrook's probably – he had a huge game, right?
Yeah. So I put this in my spreadsheet, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
It's still projecting for around 5 dupes. So I mean it's like it's in a sweet spot here.
All right, that's fine. I thought it would be one for sure.
Oh no, hang on. I had an error in here. Sorry. False flag. Let me fix this. Okay, no. Now sub 2 dupes projected.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
I mean, this is how, and then we have to bake in. There's at least 3 people who are going to dupe us watching this, so it'll get us back up to 5.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty shitty lineup, though, so we might be in the 1-3 range, even with people duping us.
I put the wrong Aaron in. Thank you, chat. There you go. We're back. In my spreadsheet, I had it correctly.
Oh, okay. Oh, so we're even lower.
We're even less. I'm sick, but I love
it. If you like it, then we could play it, because you can't go up to Tannehill. I would be fine with Woods or Westbrook, but.
Sorry, Brian. Our fate has been sealed.
All right.
This is how we win. This is how we win. We build lineups so gross that our own audience doesn't want to do.
No one would even want to play it. Back to our old ways.
Because it's like the meme where they go, oh, the sweat equity of joining in with Brian and Pete on a lineup build on stream doing well. And then it's like the gnaw wave of it's so gross that I don't even want that entertainment equity. That's the goal.
Can't blame them.
Brian, anything else going on in your neck of the woods here as we sign off?
Now, we did the take cast yesterday, if people haven't listened to that, and I'll still do MMA ownership. I guess if I stop playing MMA, I'm not going to do MMA ownership. Sorry, guys. I mean,
I used your MMA ownership last week.
It's not going to be as accurate because who knows what it's going to, you know, it's going to change throughout the slate now and stuff. So
yeah,
it's still worth it to have though, if you do keep playing it, but yeah, whatever.
Yep. Lame. Yeah. Oh yeah. People are asking about World Cup. Are you going to play World Cup DFS?
Is Davis going to get me in the secret chat?
Yeah. Davis, get us in the secret chat here. We'll see here. I can't believe that's starting up here very soon. All right. Appreciate you guys. As for me, I'll be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern with JM DeWin to talk week 11 DFS. And then for those of you guys who are YouTube members in the Hand Builders and Opto Bros channel, I do post the top plays for each showdown slate. I pull ownership from a few different sources, compare them to the sim results. So for those of you hand building a couple lineups, I do post those for all the showdown slates. If you guys want to support the channel by becoming a member and hopping in the Discord, highly recommend it. Until next time, I believe we will not have a show next Thursday, but you can catch Brian, hopefully on Ship Chasing, joining us for a little, some cocktails and some goofing on Wednesday night. You think you can make that happen, Brian?
I'm going to try to. We'll see.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. All right, guys. Have a good one. Talk to you later.